the Glow Journal podcast, a conversation with the beautiful minds behind the world's biggest beauty brands. I'm your host, beauty writer Gemma Diamond, and in this episode, I'm joined by the founder of Akari, Adrian Norris. I have thought Adrian Norris to be one of the most interesting brand founders in the country for many, many years now, since he co-founded fashion house Age in 2008. And I have loved watching him enter the beauty space upon founding skincare and wellness brand Akari just last year. There is so much about this brand and about Adrian's story that I love, but one thing in particular that I found so interesting, and I think you will too, is Adrian's passion for retail. It's been a while since I've had a founder on who can talk to the retail experience in the way that Adrian can, given that Age and Age Athletica, Age Collective, currently have 48 standalone stores. One of the reasons Adrian is so passionate about the experience of bricks and mortar retail is because he is so, so customer focused, which is something he talked about a lot in this conversation. Because Akari is a wellness brand beyond just topical skincare, having retail spaces makes the shopping experience so much more tactile, which I think is really important to a business like this. The other reason that touch point is so important, and a factor that completely blew my mind when I first heard about the brand ahead of its launch last year, was that Akari launched with 72 SKUs. That's 72 individual products and 5+ years of development, which I just find so interesting at a time when we are seeing so many brands launch with a singular hero. In this conversation, Adrian shares how his first ever business plan was written up out of boredom, whether Age and Akari have any mystery investors, and of course, why he chose to launch a brand with 72 SKUs. I have read that your mother is one of your best friends. She's your style inspiration. I've also read that one of your earliest memories of trips to the gallery with your late grandmother when you were a child. So I imagine those women might factor into your answer here. What is your earliest memory of beauty?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, look, both of them. I mean, I think that sons always have such an affinity with their mum, especially gay sons. I don't know if it's something special. But my grandma in particular, I remember when she used to take me to the galleries, she was the one that really like introduced me to art. And that was our thing. That was when, you know, whenever I went to see her, she'd either take me to a gallery. She took me to amazing shows. I remember she once took me to a Shakespeare play and that was completely in the nude. Ooh. And she went, oh, God, darling, I did not know that this was happening yet. But that was an eye-opening experience for a nine-year-old. But I think that in general, both of them really inspired me around their clothing. In terms of beauty, as in their products, I remember stealing my mum's beauty flash balm. Remember the Clarins beauty flash balm? I remember even as a little kid, I used to sneak up there and like smear it on and then run out and make sure nobody knew. But they're definitely, you know, they're both such strong, beautiful women, and they inspired me definitely down this journey that I went on.
Okay, so you've obviously always had an affinity for anything creative, really. But when you were a child, what did you think that you might grow up to be?
I had no idea. I think, you know, when I was growing up, I always drew. And I was always drawing and I was always painting. But I was also drawing clothing, but I was a bit embarrassed about it. I always say that I was like this kid that grew up. I mean, it was a long time ago. I was a kid, like I'm nearly 40 now. And I just didn't want to be seen as like someone who was drawing dresses, right? So that was just like something that, I don't know, suppressed, internalized homophobia, obviously now looking back, but I didn't want to do it. So then I went into art. So I was like, okay, I can become a painter. And that was always part of what I was doing. I was obviously studying as well at school. And then when I finished school, I got given the opportunity because of art to go to Venice and study. And so that is kind of where I really went down the artistic path. But I'd also been accepted into university back in Australia for law. So I kind of had these really opposite things going on. Yeah. And yeah, and then so I went and did the art. My parents said, go and do the art thing to start with.
Okay, so I was going to ask, is how did that decision-making process go? Was that a difficult kind of pull between studying art and studying law?
No, because I thought, this is the weirdest thing. I had three things lined up. So I could either go to university and start my law degree. I could go and become a jackaroo, which was my other dream.
Sure.
Yeah, I know, random. I could go to study art. And the only reason I went to study art and didn't become a jackaroo, because I didn't want to go do law, was because they wouldn't intake me like after a certain period of time. So wow. I gave up the jackarooing and went to Venice instead. Yeah, so I might have been a cowboy instead of sitting here in an office talking to you about beauty and dresses.
This is the Sliding Doors remake I want to see. I'm about sick of them remaking all of these 90s films, but that's the one. The one where you go, do this I want to be one. A jackaroo?
Three different options.
Wow. Okay. All right. So let's talk about Venice. So you're studying art there. How did that time, that period influence not just your work, but you as a person?
I always say that I left Noosa as this naive little surfer kid that had, I think I'd been to Bali once. And I had no really idea like what I was getting myself into. And I remember arriving in Venice and being picked up by boats. So I went and lived with a family over there and they were really into art. And that's why they had accepted me to live with them. So I was living with an Italian family. Anyway, and I got picked up by this boat and you're driving through Venice in the middle of winter and it's all the fog was everywhere. I turned up and they lived in like a palace on the Grand Canal, which was like wild. I was right near Rialto Bridge, but I was like, oh, this is nice, you know, didn't really know any different. And then I still remember walking around that first night, they said, let's take you out for a drink, and walking through Venice, it was freezing cold and it was carnival, so there was all these people in the masks, but I was walking past all the fashion stores that I'd never seen in real life. You know, grow up with Noosa, you don't really see like Armani and Versace and Dolce Gabbana. And I was just like so intrigued to see these real luxury stores in real life. And I think that was the biggest thing for me. It was going from such a polar opposite, you know, summer in Noosa to being dropped into the middle of Venice in this weird world. And it really, I still think it changes, I would say to any kid now, like go somewhere that is completely different after you've kind of finished school, because it changes the way you think of everything. And I always say that I've got no fear of risk. Like it's sometimes a bad thing, but I'm like, risk, there's no, like, what is that? And I really think that that's because, you know, I was thrown into a completely different culture and world and you just had to like live it and survive. And there was no other options. We didn't have phones back then either that worked. I had to text. If I wanted to talk to my mum and dad, I'd have to like go on MSN Messenger. I'd like sneak out of class, find an internet that worked. Yeah, an MSN Messenger. And then we could talk like once every month or 2 months. I could talk to my parents.
Wow.
So yeah, it changes you.
Yeah, okay. So let's go through this timeline. At that point, as you're seeing all of these like amazing fashion houses, were you still feeling embarrassed about drawing clothes, or was it at that point that you were like, okay,
so I was painting. So my whole study there was painting. So I was at the art school there practicing art every day. And then I think what happened was I have one of these brains that needs to do something, otherwise I go crazy. So I downloaded all these how to like guides, and one of them was how to write a business plan. And so I'd spend all of my afternoons writing a business plan for a fashion brand. So I thought that was, and I remember it was long. It must have been like for a 17-year-old, it was a big business plan. Like I remember sending it to my parents and they were like, what the F is this? Like, why have you sent us this like 65-page detailed business plan? They're like, it's really good, but when did you do this? I was like, oh, well, I just did it after school because there was nothing else to do. Yeah. So I think that when I kind of flipped in my head, oh, wait, I can call myself a businessman and not a fashion designer. It's all these internalized justifications for doing it. So that's when I started getting really interested in that and seeing, I think being so immersed in Italy and being immersed in fashion and being immersed in beauty and retail and all of those things definitely, yeah, led me down that path. So I started writing these business plans. So I wrote a business plan for, oh my God, what was it called? Aurel Jeans. Something really random. I should have a look and try and find it. It's probably on a desktop or printed out at my parents' house somewhere.
Oh, I would love that. Okay, so this is perfect. This is all making sense as far as the timeline goes. Obviously, we want to talk about Akari, but we do need to talk about age because it's such a big part of your story. You and Edwina founded the brand 2008, if research serves. How did the two of you meet? How'd the brand come to be? I believe you had a store in Noosa at the time called Strada, perhaps?
Yes, Little Strada. So I'd come back from Italy and then I tried to study law, and that was an absolute
Oh, you took a whack at it. Okay.
I took like 6 weeks.
Nice.
I remember turning up to the first exam thinking that I could do what I did in every other exam, which was not study, and turn up and wing it. And I remember turning up and opening this exam and going, oh God, like these questions don't make any, like I can't even make this stuff up. And then I realized, I was like, no, this is not the path for me. So then I did more design study, really only for a short period, for about 6 months. And then at COFA, and then I opened a store in Noosa. And that's when we were buying other brands. So we were buying other Australian designers and international designers. And then I had some rocky financial times doing that because I had no idea how to run a business. And I started making clothes in Bali to sell in Strada. And that's kind of when Eddie and I got together.
Okay, cool. And then at what point did the two of you go, we should start a brand together?
Then, like literally then.
Wow.
I was like, we've got to make some clothes. We've got to sell more clothes. And for us, and I was really interested in, I couldn't find the clothes that my customers wanted. Mm-hmm. That was my biggest thing. So we had Strada for like a year and a half, and everything was either too expensive or it was too city, and or they would give it to us. Like we were a little tiny like shopping nurses, so we couldn't go and buy, like back then, like Dolce & Gabbana and Diesel were like the big things, and we couldn't get them. So we're like, oh, we can make our own stuff. And so that's how we started. And we started selling in the Noosa store to start with.
Love that. Okay. So now across Age and Age Athletica, there's something like 42 stores across Australia and New Zealand, but it did really just start off just the two of you. What were some of the lessons that you learned when the brand was in its infancy and as your career as a business owner?
I'm still learning. I don't think you ever stop learning.
Yeah.
I think that the biggest learning now, oh God, what is it? It's customer. If you don't listen to your customer and if you don't give your customer what you want, regardless of how beautiful the product is, then if it's not suiting a purpose for them in the end, then you're going to have real trouble selling enough of it to be sustainable. That's like the simplest way. And also cash flow. Watch your cash flow, kids.
Yeah, that'll do it. Okay, well, that might play into my next question, because this might be difficult to answer objectively, but Age is in its 16th year now. While there has obviously been ups and downs, a global financial crisis or two will do that, the brand is thriving where we've seen so many other brands kind of come and go over that time. So my question is, what do you think it is about Age that continues to resonate with so many customers to this day? What sets the brand and your designs apart?
Oh, gosh, I think, look, numerous things. I think in fashion, it's hard because sometimes you just don't design great dresses. Like I always say, it's like this up and down, and you're continually having to redesign and remake and think about what you're doing. And, you know, we produce a lot of clothes at Age. I think the one thing that keeps us going is, as I mentioned before, is customer first. Mm-hmm. And if you design clothes that people really want to wear, then you're going to be successful. I think that I would say it'd be really easy for me to design the most beautiful collection in the world and hang it on the rack and have everyone just gasp all the time at how beautiful it was. But it would probably be the most cost prohibitive clothing that you could ever imagine. And very few people get the luxury of doing that. So it's the balance, right? It's a little bit of compromise. It's balance. It's understanding where a customer is going to wear your product to. Mm-hmm. And I reckon that's what gets us through. Like, I've been through 2-3 financial crises, COVID, like everything. You just got to keep, and it's like, it's business. You just got to keep like pushing forward. Like, there's ups and there's downs always.
Okay, let's talk Akari. It was your relationship with your own health and overall well-being that inspired the brand. Can you tell me about that relationship, and has your approach to wellness changed over time?
Yes. So I remember I really started getting interested in this whole wellness space years ago. This is probably, how old am I now? Nearly 40 this year. Jesus. So it was probably just before I hit 30, mm-hmm. where I was just probably unhappy with the way I looked, the way I felt. You know, I was sluggish, I was stressed, I was still going out and I was drinking and doing all the things that you're meant to do in your 20s. But nowadays I look at all those influencers, they're like 21, 22. I'm like, you guys are ripped. And like, they only eat meat and a couple of berries. And I'm like, God, I wish I knew about that when I was 21. Cause yeah, that wasn't what I was doing.
Doing Pilates at all hours.
Yeah. No, I didn't even know what a gym looked like. I was out partying till God knows what time. So it caught up to me at like 29. I was like, oh, I'm exhausted. And I just started really looking into what made me feel better. First and foremost. And for me, that was diet and exercise. And when I controlled those things, I started feeling so much better and so much clearer. And when I eliminated alcohol for a time, I stopped drinking for a long time. Now I still drink maybe once a week. I have like a glass of wine, something nice to celebrate, but I definitely wouldn't drink on a like continual basis. But I think that those things, when I started realizing that, and then coupled with my skin was really reactive and I was had a lot of red in my skin and I had no idea why, like my face was always red, but no other parts of my body were red. And so then I've started eliminating all the things that I was using on my face. And that's when I started discovering all the natural skincare and that didn't make my face react. So that's what I really liked about it. And that's where it all kind of like spiraled from there. I'd always been interested. I'd always thought that it was a really interesting space and that it was always somewhere that, like, when I started doing this, it wasn't a thing. Like,
yeah,
you'd have to go to like a random health food store and buy like a dodgy like cream which featuring somebody who probably made in their backyard. And it just like natural wasn't even a word that anyone would talk about when they were talking about skincare. And so that was really, I was searching it out as well as kind of focusing more on my diet and my supplements. And that's how it all started.
So this is the thing. It's one thing to have an interest in or even a passion for wellness. Another thing entirely to go, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to launch a business. So what was the gap you wanted to fill? At what point did you go, this is what I'm going to do?
Remember when I said the business plan when I got bored?
Yeah, okay. You were bored.
Yeah, I wrote a business plan. So with Akari, I actually then put together a deck. This was actually years and years ago. I put together this huge deck because I thought, well, you know what? One day I think this would be an amazing business. And no one was doing it at that stage. And I was like, well, I'm really good at retail. I'm good at product. Maybe this is something that I'd be interested in the future. Or if I wasn't making clothes, what would I be doing? So I made this business plan. And when COVID happened, and then we navigated our way through COVID, but we were still kind of locked down. So Age, the business, was doing really well during COVID. And I was looking to open more Athletica stores. And we basically kind of thought, well, instead of, you know, selling heaps more sneakers, why don't we look at these wellness products that I'd had this whole plan for, and we could move into this space there and be this whole kind of ecosystem. And that's really where it came about. And Yeah, and then we just started working on it.
Okay, so talk me through the just started working on it part, because I read that it was about 5 years of development, which tracks when you look at the number of products. How did that process kind of run for you? How did you find the right manufacturer, land on the packaging? Did you bring in investors? Did you bootstrap? There are so many steps that go into bringing something to life.
So no investors. There's always rumors about that I have all these like fantasy investors in all my businesses. There's no investors.
Must be nice.
Well, I've got my dad. My dad is my minority investor, and my best friend, Tom, is involved. But yeah, everybody writes all these things about these investors that are investing in age and you know, there's none. There's absolutely none. It is all Eddie and I and my dad and my original two friends who were involved in the business. So no investors. We bootstrapped it, but I'm very lucky that when we were doing this, I had access to, I knew how to build a team.
Yeah.
And I always support myself with experts around me. And whilst I'm not an expert myself, I really knew what I wanted the end product to be like. And I was really fortunate to be able to then employ experts to help me make it become a reality, because that's the biggest thing. There's one thing is an idea, and then to get it to an end point, it's a huge amount of work. But I've also had 18 years experience doing that in a slightly different market, but it's kind of similar.
Similar customer, for sure.
Similar customer, similar product timelines. Like, you've got to understand the end use. You've got to understand factories, production, design. It's all that, but I did it just with skin and supplements.
One thing that I imagine added on to that timeline was the Ikari Responsibility Charter. Going into product development with such a really clear idea of where you wanted the brand to sit as far as sustainability means things are going to take longer, means things are going to cost more. Can you share a bit about that responsibility charter and why that was so important?
So the big thing for me with the responsibility charter was that I was doing it in the age business, but I was retrofitting, and retrofitting a business of my size to suddenly be, you know, responsible was like the most incredibly time consuming, expensive job. Like, you can imagine, we already had suppliers and nobody was talking about sustainability until a few years ago. So then suddenly it was, you have to be sustainable. And we had a huge business that we were like retrofitting, so turning things around and changing things. And so when I started out with Ikari, I was like, no, we need to start as we mean to end. But saying that, it's probably the hardest category to be sustainable in. So for us, that was why it was so important to start how we were meant to finish, but B, the whole way through the production process. I mean, trying to eliminate plastic in a beauty company is one of the wildest things you will ever try and do. And it can't ever be done, right? But I was like really adamant that I didn't want to continually add to the waste that was existing in this world. Or if I was going to add to the waste, then that had to be something that could be recycled and repurposed or reused and refilled. So I'm really proud that I think we achieved about a 90% plastic free in our componentry. And then we were plastic neutral certified, which is a bit of one of those things where you have to like you offset certain parts of your business. And yeah, it's a bit of, it's not greenwashing, but I think that it's important to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, we always had the refills. So whilst I would love all 72 products to be refillable, one day they will be. But in terms of like ordering minimums, we have to order, you know, 500 to 1,000 refills. So we've got to sell some of the product first. So we're really proud that we've launched our refillables in our body care product, our hand washes, and we're just about to launch our tonic refills.
Oh my
God, the tonic refills, the tonics just disappear. So we needed to refill them really quickly.
You mentioned 72 products. This is, I mean, you know,
wild.
That this blows my mind. Firstly, why 72? We see all these brands launching with a singular product. So what made you just want to completely buck the trend and go, no, I'll do 72?
Okay, I think it's that, you know how I said I had no fear?
Yeah, clearly.
Everyone kept telling me, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm just doing what I want to do. I also had an end goal. So for me, I love retail and I love being able to give an experience, a retail experience. And with this, you know, what I'd learned over time was I'd become an expert to a lot of the people close to me, or my staff, my friends are like, how do I look and feel better? Like, what are you doing? Like, you've got so much pressure on you and yet you seem to be holding it all together. And I was like, well, actually, it's not one thing. You know, it's not one miracle cream. It's not one. And so what I realized was, well, I go through, I use so many different products and sometimes I use them at different times. So sometimes I might be on a completely different kind of bandwagon and I might be doing, you know, the bovine liver and the vitality and, you know, maybe the overnight renewal cream or whatever it is. And then another time I'd be like, you know what, I just want to feel like really hydrated. And so I'm going through a different thing. I'm doing the bovine collagen and stuff like that. So for me, my end goal, which was achieved, which is really nice when you achieve your goals, was to have that store where somebody could walk in and talk to me or talk to one of my staff and say, hey, this is how I feel. And I would be able to say, well, this is how I can help you feel better. And I think that, you know, with Akari, it's not anything. There's no miracles. I think we've been sold this dream for so long in beauty and health that there's one thing, like use this oil and you will look beautiful, or take this supplement and you will feel better. You might feel a little bit better, but like, it's not about one thing. It's about what do I do across the board and how do I continually do that. And it was funny, I worked in so we opened our Noosa flagship in Christmas, during Christmas time, and I said to the team, I said, well, I live in Noosa with my family, I don't anymore, but on holidays I go back, and I said, well, I'm going up there because I want to go and talk to my customers on the floor and I want to work on the floor. I want to see how they react to the product, because it's very easy to sit around a table with a whole lot of people that you're paying and they tell you that you're great.
Yeah.
And so you know, all the products are great, you're great, everything's great, weather great, we're going to kill it, et cetera, et cetera. I was like, hey, I got to get them to see the real world reaction to this. So Noosa was, it was one of my really proud moments. It was actually the store next door to where we launched Age. So we found that it was just really synchronistic. I don't know the word. Synchronicity.
I love the sound of that, regardless of whether or not it's a word.
Sounds good. Yeah. So we took the store next door and we turned that into the Akari flagship. And it's, I still think it's one of, I just came back from Paris and London last week, and there is nowhere that is doing wellness and holistic health and beauty as well as we are doing in that store. And sorry to go back because I got lost. The 72 SKUs, it was so amazing that every customer that came in, I worked for nearly 2 weeks on the floor there. Every customer that came in would talk to me and I would be able to give them a completely unique protocol for them and their holistic health journey. And I think that's why when someone says, why'd you make 72 SKUs? I was like, well, because I needed 72 options, because there were so many different ways that we could make people feel better.
Well, on that, on there not being any one thing that's going to change everything, the way you look, the way you feel, the way you're operating, Akari has those three pillars, inner, outer, and aura. Can you talk me through each of those and why you needed all three to work together?
Yeah. So basically, I always said, like, if you're not putting good things into your body, you're never going to feel or look good. And then we all know that topically, you need to utilize things. So for me, the inner was all about, I always say, like, if somebody, I can, when people come up to me, like, oh, I just feel really tired. I look at them, I'm like, well, what's your diet? Like, what are you eating? Because I think that when people eat well, they look well and they feel well. And I always thought that, not thought, I knew that a lot of the people around me just weren't getting the nutrition into them and the correct nutrition. So I always use like my mum for an example, like, and my grandma. Actually, my grandma's probably an even better one, but I nearly killed my grandma, so I've got to be careful of that one. I gave her the wrong supplements. That was a very good learning curve.
Okay, noted.
No, I put maca powder in her protein shake and it can reduce your blood pressure. But this is years ago and I had no idea. So that's why I'm really, right? That's why I'm so specific now around like what we use and how we use it, because these natural products, like we think that they're, you know, benign and we can just go pick them up from the health food store, but they actually have these incredible effects on the body. And that was a really, I'll give you that learning curve. So basically my grandma, she's like, oh, darling, I'm so tired. And she was like in her 90s by this stage. I was like, that's because you've had one piece of toast with marmalade and a cup of tea. And that's all you've eaten all day. And no wonder you can't get off the couch. So I was like, oh, I can fix this. I can give you a shake. So I was like, I went down and I went to the health food store. I made all these things like, you know, the whole milk and the honey and the eggs and protein. And then I was like, okay, well, I'll give her some maca because that'll give her a little bit of energy burst. And I didn't really even ask her. She was on warfarin, which is a blood thinner. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and so the maca was thinning her blood on top of the warfarin that they were adding. And so, yeah, she went to her doctor and they said, what are you doing? Like, there's something going really wrong here. Anyway, that was a lesson to learn to make sure that what you put in or what you give people is correct. So there is nothing like that in the curry, but it was a real learn for me around anyone that I meet. I always ask them what they eat. And I feel like people don't get nutrition into them properly. And so for us, a lot of the building blocks of the inner was around nutrition on the go. Like, how do we get people a more nutritious serving of vitamins? I don't believe in using, you know, vitamin C and, you know, their lab kind of created ascorbic acid type things. So that's why we have the bovine liver supplements, which is, you know, every single most nutrient dense product that you can get into, but nobody wants to eat a big chunk of liver every day, which is not fun. So we hydrolyze them, which is kind of like a freeze drying technique. We put them in. We have a wild herb capsule. We have a collagen capsule. We have a biocolostrum capsule, which is really good for immunity and gut health. So I kind of did this whole capsule thing. And then we went on to the tonics, which were my favorite part. So that was, again, oh, they're so good. You know what? Again, sometimes I forget I own a wellness brand. I'm like, I'm not sleeping. And I was like, oh, wait a second. How did I even forget that I have a sleep
What's
tonic?
What's this thing like called deep sleep tonic? Yeah.
I had the best sleep of my life yet again. And then I was like, it's incredible. So basically with the tonics, I wanted to find a way to get more bioavailable forms of vitamins into the body, but also like herbal tonics and tinctures and a whole heap of different things that I was using separately. How do I actually create something that is easy to consume and has a really amazing effect on my body? And we did, you know, there's one there, we have the turmeric tonic, and that has like, I think it's got 62% curcumin content. It's like one of the highest curcumin contents that you can get in a supplement. And it literally, it stops my thumbs aching as soon as I take it. Like my thumbs stop aching. And so there's really amazing things like that. We also do our vitality tonic, which is basically a version of, it's not a pre-workout, but I used to use pre-workout. So it was like, how do I give myself energy without using chemicals and stuffing up my endocrine system? So it was all about, you know, guarana, it's got natural green coffee extracts, it's got gotu-gola, it's got a whole heap of amazing herbs that work synergistically together to give you sustained energy without the crash afterwards. So
it's so good.
It's so everyone's like, what is that vitality thing? I feel like amazing. So I do like a morning thing where I use like vitality, a little bit of bulletproof, and then I usually add something else into it. So either the turmeric tonic, I also really love the detox support, which is really good. The other one is the adrenal fatigue is like amazing. So that was when I had long COVID. So yeah. I was in New York with really, really bad long COVID. I went to this like herbery. I don't even know what it's called. They sold a bit of apothecary. They sold a bit of weed as well, but I didn't really partake in that for the long COVID. But she like brought all of these different things out, and it was mainly, it was really based on ashwagandha and how that would actually help my adrenal system recover.
Wow.
So the adrenal fatigue tonic's great. It's also amazing for stress. It binds to cortisol. So I had a friend up in Noosa who came in to see me. She had terrible skin. And she asked, like, what can I do to help? And I was like, well, this is a perfect example. We can't just hit you with something topically because you've been doing that and your skin looks terrible. And so for her, that we went after, we used the adrenal support tonic and the stress support tonics. I said, you're really stressed. So that's coming out in your skin. We used the bovine liver and the colostrum. So the bovine liver was for nutrients. The colostrum was for immunity and gut health. So we did those first, and then we did the topical. And then on top of that, when she started to see an improvement, we added in the radiance tonic. And nice. Her skin was, I think I showed you, remember?
I was wondering if it was but the it same was person,
like,
yeah.
It's the same, yeah, the same one. And it's like, no one thing is going to fix you.
Nah.
And no one thing was going to fix her because she'd been to doctors and dermatologists and all this, and she just had really dry skin from it, but still had like cystic acne. And it was like, okay, how can we holistically come together and kind of fight the root causes? And, you know, maybe some of them had no effect on her skin, right?
Yeah. But
when we use them all together, it really, really, really improved her skin and also her mindset. You know, once you start seeing improvements, you start becoming less stressed, you start becoming less anxious about it, you stop touching it, and it's a really, get into a really good cycle rather than staying in that vicious cycle.
There is a pretty major education piece that has to come alongside launching supplements. I could be wrong, but I imagine it's harder to convince people on a supplement than it is to get them on board with topical skincare. So beyond you physically getting in the stores and talking to these people one-on-one, how
are you they're selling?
Yeah. How are you going about that education?
Do you know,
piece?
Strangely, I mean, our education piece is ongoing, right? Yeah. So you can put as much information as you can online. I think that in stores, we're really endeavoring to for those people that are working for us to become experts. But weirdly, everyone is just taking those tonics. Like, and I think
there's nothing like them, though.
I think that feeling, everyone wants to feel better and live longer, right? Yeah. That's all about things. And if there is a little bottle that has that on it, and I actually think the uptake around that and that feeling of vitality is what everyone is going for. I actually think it's harder to get someone to change their skincare than it is for somebody to try a new tonic. So for us, the tonics have been, because I thought they were wild. When I developed, like, what are these things? I was like, well, I just kind of want to help myself feel better and I want to feel more alive and more vital. So let's create this line of tonics. And the tonics have been probably the fastest uptake compared to everything else. So it's really interesting. And I think that the best thing about the tonics is as soon as someone uses them, they have an immediate effect.
Yeah.
So, and that's like, I always tell people, I'm like, just go away, come back and talk to me in 2 days. And like the sleep tonic, people will come back and
I came
just
back
be like,
in a couple of
what
hours.
Have you done?
Yeah.
Yeah, like literally give me a liter of that stuff right now. But there's other ones in there, like I love the stress support tonic. So the stress support tonic is kind of this incredible mixture of floral extracts that was used in Rescue Remedy, you know, the old school Remedy. So that's like an old school tincture from like the 1900s. So we went and researched all the different flowers and herbs that they used in that, and we extracted them in a completely new format and put them in our stress relief tonic. And it's like, I'd say it's the closest thing to like CBD. You take it and it's just like, I'm like, oh, it's not like you've taken something strong and you're like woozed out, but you just, it brings your anxiety levels down. It's a really beautiful, natural, low tox way of achieving that.
There's just nothing like those tonics. There's nothing out there that's
so good.
Oh, they're unreal. I'm kind of going backwards here. You were talking about how much you love retail and how valuable it has been for you to get that like sort of one-on-one time, but you know, you are one person and yes, you have a team, but why do you think having that physical touch point is so important versus just selling online?
Look, I think we live in a world where online is always going to be part of our business and it's the way that we can reach the most customers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably just a bit old-fashioned. I just love walking into a space where I have amazing service and where I can touch and feel the products and sample them and talk to an expert. And I think that, you know, age is a success because we are a true omni-channel business. I think that many people say they're an omni-channel business and they're not. But we seriously have an amazing online business. We have amazing social engagement. And then you can go into a store and talk to an expert, touch, feel, fit, decide whether you like it or not, return it, you know, all those sort of things. So for me, it was really important that we did that with Akari, and especially, you know, the market out there now. I remember when I started this, there was no clean beauty. Mm-hmm. There was nobody thinking about clean beauty, low tox. Supplements were really kind of male orientated.
Yeah,
fringe.
That's so true.
Yeah, like the giant, like go and buy your 6 kilos of protein powder and haul it home type thing. So for me, it was also about how do I curate a kind of modern day apothecary where both men and women feel really comfortable coming in and talking and, you know, being served and finding the products that suit them most. Mm.
I could be wrong, but even though you've got 72 products, based on you just whipping up a business plan out of boredom more than once, I would imagine there's maybe more products in the works, in which case, how does that product development process work for you? Are you constantly thinking about what might come next? Are you?
I'm constantly being controlled now.
Yeah, okay. Talk to me about consumer demand and stuff.
Stop developing things. Stop developing. No, look, I don't think that I'm one of those people. I'm constantly curious. So. Yeah. That will never stop. So I don't think I'm going to launch another 72 products like in the next year, anything like that. But there, yeah, thank you. There are definitely a few things that I love and that either there'll be more versions of. Like I'd love to add a couple more tonics. There's some definite ones kind of brewing around in my head. But also I think like, you know, that self-care. I say so, there's this really awful, no, it's a great documentary, but an awful analogy of where somebody's explaining what bubble bath does to children.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, like if you fill up a bath of hot water and add like a generic bubble bath, you are literally soaking your child in like petrochemicals, phthalates, dyes, synthetic fragrances, like all the worst things. Then you're heating it up and like letting that kid like just have a really good time and marinate in that stew of chemicals. So for me, it's about things like how can I give that same experience to someone, but not actually have that whole entire chemical thing going on. So for me, it's about like a really beautiful low-tox magnesium soak that feels really luxurious and like a bubble bath, and your kid could be in it, you could be in it, but you're actually coming out and you're nourishing your body and nourishing your skin rather than, you know, dousing yourself in chemicals. I was in London the other week and I was staying at the Chiltern Firehouse, which is one of my favorite hotels. I had like the amazing bath, but I was like, what is this bubble bath? Like, I was like, okay, I'm gonna have a bath, but literally the only thing in there was like this. I was like, all right, I'm just gonna do it. And I put the bubble bath in and I felt awful afterwards. I was just like, when I was in it, I was like, I could just smell all the like fragrances and I had to have a shower afterwards. So like in terms of products, it's about me going, okay, what are the new things that I can bring to market that are going to give people these beautiful sensory experiences while still kind of expanding that whole low-tox lifestyle?
And are all those ideas just popping up in your brain, or do you have customers now that are saying, this is what we want, can you make this for us, or is it both?
Both. Mm-hmm. Both. I think customers love feedback.
Yes.
So we're always getting, sometimes I'm like, wow, okay, thank you for your feedback. But it's a mixture of things. So yeah, if we start seeing trends and seeing what people are asking for, we will definitely be looking into that. Otherwise, it's just, yeah, it's things that kind of pop into my head, and I think about how I would like to experience things and what I'm experiencing in my own world, and how I can offer something that's a really good substitute or even better.
Ikari has been in the world for just over a year now, but obviously spent a good five in development. Over the last few years, what have been some of the biggest changes that you have seen within the beauty industry?
Look, I think that this whole realization, I think we are just on the cusp of it, that women have been lied to about what was in the products that they were putting on their face and on their body. And I think we're just on, like, people are just awakening to the fact that these big companies, they didn't care about you. They didn't care what was going on to your skin, as long as it smelled nice and that it went on smoothly and that you thought you got a really nice reaction and the packaging was nice. Like, they got away with it for years, like years and years, and made a lot of money. And so I think that what I've seen over the past few years is that people are really starting to question what's in that little jar of product that they're putting on their skin and what the long-term effect of exposing themselves to that every day is. And no, we didn't know. And it's kind of like, they say it's like the new tobacco. Like, people were smoking for years and years and years, and the doctor was saying it's fine. And then everyone went, oh gosh, it's not. Like, don't keep doing this for too long. And, you know, we're seeing so many things in the world that nobody knows why, you know, cancer rates increasing or whatever, melanoma is increasing, or what, all these things. Nobody really knows why. We probably will never know. But for me personally, I feel like if we can reduce the amount of things that we're exposing ourselves to that we don't know what the effects are going to be, that's the way forward. And I feel like I have watched amazingly this come full circle and be something that everyone is talking about now. I don't think people are doing it yet, because sometimes you just still want that retinol that's going to make your skin glowy and all that sort of stuff.
Guilty.
But I think that now, yeah, 100% stop it. But anyway, I think that, you know, we're becoming more aware. That's the greatest change that I've seen. But I think it will turn into a crescendo over the coming 5 to 10 years. We will look back on what we allowed big companies to put into products, and that we allowed to put on ourselves and on our children and in our shampoos and in our bubble bath. And we will go, holy moly, how did we let them do that to us?
Well, my next question was going to be, what changes do you think we can expect to see from the industry over the coming few years? But I guess that's that.
Well, we're seeing it. We're seeing it now. And I watch it, and it's always so subtle that you never even notice. Like, just products disappearing. Why would a product disappear? Right? Like, somebody talked to me, who was, something got cancelled the other day. Skittles. Was it Skittles that got cancelled? I don't even buy Skittles anymore.
There you go. These are not the things that are popping up on my feed.
Don't quote me.
No plans.
But don't quote me if it's Skittles or it's something else. It's one of, I think it's Skittles. But everyone, oh, that's such a shame. Skittles have been cancelled. And I'm using Skittles as an analogy. It might have been, like, I don't know, some sort of a Fredo Frog. It's not Fredo Frogs. But I was like, no business cancels a huge profit-making product line just out of the blue. They only go, uh-oh, we're not going to make blue Skittles anymore. We've decided against that. Like, there is some serious data of something going wrong behind the scenes that they know about, and they need to quickly stop it before a law case comes forward, like a Johnson & Johnson type thing. So I think that we're going to be seeing more and more of those things just quietly disappearing. And the only reason they're going to be disappearing, it's not from the goodness of their heart. It's because there's something dangerous in there that they've been exposing us to, and, you know, they don't want to get in trouble.
I hope my devices are listening to this, and this is the stuff I get to see on my TikTok feed now.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Your TikTok's going to go off now.
I hope so. I really hope so. Okay, final question. What is next for Ikari?
Look, I think we're just building on what we've got at the moment. And I think that the most important thing for me is that more people can see, you know, how beautiful the products are and how amazing they make you feel when you use them. And, you know, that's the nicest thing is when I talk to customers and they go, oh my God, my skin just feels better. And I just feel like I'm not as tired, or I just feel like I've got more energy, or like I've stopped breaking out, or whatever it is. That's what I love hearing. And I feel like for us, it's just about getting more product in more people's hands so that they can start to experience that feeling of vitality.
That was Adrian Norris, founder of Ikari, which you can find on Instagram at ikari.australia. To read more, you can visit glowjournal.com. And for more beauty news, you can find me on Instagram at gemdiamond or at glow.journal. If you liked this episode, please do not forget to subscribe, rate, review, and share so other beauty and business lovers can find us. I'm Gemma Diamond. You've been listening to the Glow Journal podcast, and thank you for joining me. The Glow Journal podcast would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people, the traditional custodians of the land upon which this podcast is produced. We pay our respects to elders past and present.